Hey, welcome back to the Salmena Show. You know, this one came out a little bit later than normal. You guys know that I try to put these out on Thursday for everybody, but this one means a lot more to me, so I wanted to take some extra time and make sure I do it justice. Today with me is Corey and Sean. They've both been on the show before, either via phone, but now they're with me. All three of us are together. We've all been friends since at least kindergarten, first grade, in Corey's case. And it meant a lot to get together. Last time we were together was 4 years ago, and it just feels like we picked right up where we left off. And I hope you guys give me the time. It's about an hour 20 this week. Split it up. Cut your grass. Do yard work. When you drop your kids off to school, whatever. But a lot of cool stories. A lot of stories that I don't know how I'm going to handle. So maybe in the future, the outtakes of this 4.5 hour conversation will come out. But for now, just everyday life stuff. A lot of sports stuff, of course. And see what you can do to have a laugh and kind of relate it to what's going on in your lives, and maybe just an introspective of what it's like to have best friends for 30 years. All right, let's do this.
When the prospect of this first came up, when Sean was like, "Oh, I'm coming home in April," I'm like, "Holy shit, we all got to get together." And you know, like, so I'm like thinking in my head, I'm like, "Well, what can we honestly talk about?" You know, like, I dare anybody to get together. First of all, nobody's friends with the friends that they've had since kindergarten and first grade.
Right.
Nobody. And, you know, hats off to us because we're the shit and we still are, no matter if 3,000 miles separates us or if, you know, 50 miles separates us. But I feel like, can we sit and talk about politics or sports? Yeah, we can. But it's way more fun to talk about sixth grade and way more fun to talk about seventh grade and ninth grade and whatever. Agreed. And it that makes, to me, these kids now, and here we go, old man talking again, do they have that? Where I'll be at parties sometimes, and I'll watch my nieces and nephews or other younger kids, and they're all sitting on the couch together, but their heads are buried in their phone, Snapchatting or other social media, where they're probably snapping each other when they're sitting right next to each other.
Oh, yeah.
Why is that lost? Like, are... And I'm starting to come around because I work with a lot of kids that have explained to me it's just what you do now. And, you know, back in the day when we had Nintendo and Super Nintendo, this is their Nintendo and Super Nintendo.
You had to go over each other's house. You had to get on your bike, go to his house, even if it's cold and it's a pain in the butt. But then you get there, and what was fun is you can talk shit in their face and, you know, and it's that face-to-face. That makes it a little different.
Yeah.
You're talking shit. It's like, you can talk shit, but... He could also punch you.
He could also punch you. Right,
whereas
now,
you know, you're playing online, right, you kind of just go off and you're
right.
You're
everybody hides behind the keyboard.
But then, Corey, you talked about there's the whole new issue as a teacher, as an educator now, where you guys got to deal with the social media.
Oh yeah, it's huge. It's a lot of our problems. They don't even start in school. They always start on social media at some point, and it gets to the, like I said, you know, a rumor might start and last for a week when we were kids, and only like maybe 20 people might know it. And nowadays, a rumor could start over something stupid, and 500 to 1,000 people will know about it within an hour.
Yep, in an hour.
Within an hour, you know, because they get, what did they post? Oh my God, can you hear it? And then it just spreads like wildfire. And so I think it's magnified for kids nowadays, which is why I think, honestly, I don't think kids should be on social media. I think Facebook started with college kids.
Yeah.
And is now basically the old person's format for communication
keeping
people. Yeah, keeping
in
touch.
Yeah, we all want to see what we're eating.
Exactly.
We all want to see what our dogs are doing.
Right.
And then Facebook went and screwed up the feed by putting list after list after list after
list. Right.
And, you know, that like the kids aren't on Facebook anymore.
Right. No, they're not. And then they went to Twitter. And even Twitter is similar.
Still on blast.
They
want to get on.
Exactly. So now they're not even on Twitter anymore. They went to Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Instagram, you have to post a photo to say something, you know? So then they're not they're just looking at photos the whole time. Then they went to Snapchat.
Yeah, and then they can hide.
And there's other shit that they do, but Snapchat is, you know, this is what I'm doing right now, and this is what I'm doing, and they put it on their Snapchat
story.
Right,
it's gone in 10 seconds.
And then someone watches, this is 5 minutes of what he did today.
Right.
No, but, like, back in the day, we would not even have been interested in that. You know, that really wouldn't have been interesting.
Well, would we have?
All the crazy stuff we did, we would set up, hey, get me a video jumping over this woodchip pile.
Yeah, well, that, okay.
You know, that,
like I said, we would have been YouTube sensations. You, particularly, would have been a YouTube sensation back in the day, for sure.
Yeah.
You know?
especially because we did stuff just to do it in front of each other. Imagine a video camera rolling.
Oh my god!
You have subscribers, and you're like, dude, if I just do a backflip over this fence, you know, and this dog comes in and hits my face.
So my kids watch a lot of YouTube videos, and it's like, okay, cool. You know, they're watching Scooby-Doo or they're watching whatever. Mm-hmm. No, they're watching unboxings of toys. They're watching other kids play with toys.
Oh my god, it's the saddest thing.
Or they're
it?
Watching the little chocolate eggs with the toys inside. They're watching them open that stuff up. And the Daddy Finger, I want to blow my brains out when I hear that song. If that stuff's going viral, if we had Sean jumping over the wood chip pile in the Kuahara and then falling 10 feet straight down, his head through a fence with the dog coming while I'm laughing my ass off, not trying to help him, that video would have gone all over the place.
Oh, it would have been everywhere.
It would have gone everywhere.
Dude, just the...
me falling off of multiple rollerblade ramps on my ass and breaking my back and breaking my hip and breaking my...
But luckily, my mom stood out there for hours, pointed the camera at us because I was like, get me, you know.
But that
was even rare. Those old videos I have, it's really... I put them finally...
Yeah, nobody videotaped them. Your mama, the one when I did fall, I went up the ramp and I didn't vault off the ramp. I just fell straight down. You know, like Sean had just done some, you know, kick-ass trick or whatever. And I went up and then I fell right away. And like the instant reaction was like, ooh, ooh. And then like the camera just went right off. Like all I remember from that was like the writhing pain and agony. And then watching it again where Sean's mom was just like, ooh, ooh. And then the camera going off.
Well, most of them we did laugh afterwards. We were like, ah.
Yeah.
But that one we knew. Oh, like, yeah, that one looked pretty rough.
We laughed. After I got the 6-inch pin in my hip.
I just wish we had a video camera back then. So that's one thing that would have been cool. I mean, the shit we were doing.
How stupid. We propped that thing up on those car jack things.
The little trampoline.
The trampoline. And we jumped up until even the rubber stoppers on the bottom of the trampoline were like burnt off and whatever.
You had the worst.
So then
they
became even more dangerous the tar. The black tar.
That thing was the slipperiest. You know, dirty, and you fall. You're like,
dude, your hands
dirt.
Were always dirty after playing basketball.
Yep,
it was like, oh,
and your rim. We kept dunking till it fell off.
Until it fell off.
No, it was the evolution of the rim where it was a circle, and then it became an oval, and then
it
became a bent oval tilted down where you're shooting straight at it, and then finally came off.
We broke mine. We broke yours. Well, remember the ones we'd use trampoline in mine.
Yeah,
but then if you caught the ball and didn't have the rim, and I fell on my head a couple times.
Well, you had the brilliant idea the one time, like, oh, I'm going to get that rebounder thing so the ball doesn't go on the neighbor. How many times did we fuck our heads up and our arms up hitting our head on that? Remember the thing that would connect to the bottom and the – oh, my God.
Well, how many times did we jump off someone's house? We jumped off everyone's house.
Jumped off my garage, my house,
With the blanket because it was a parachute.
Yeah, and then, you know, oh, I got locked out of my house. I'm going to scale up that sucker and jump in the window. I don't think kids do that.
No.
Well, they don't because the app will open their locks on their phone now.
That's probably good they don't do that.
Yeah.
But so, you know, we obviously...
What are we trying to promote here?
No, we're trying to promote that we were the shit and these kids now aren't. That's the bottom line.
We sound
old.
Well,
I'm saying we got...
I don't care. We are old.
We do.
I'm not old, damn it.
No, the interaction that we got was good. There is some cool stuff that we wish we had back then. Like, cameras and shit would have been cool. I actually probably wouldn't have been crazy. I probably would have got hurt.
I couldn't imagine you with a GoPro.
Yeah, I think...
Yo, if he had a GoPro...
See, we already had kind of like invincibility mentality. And if it's on video... And I know, even when my mom used to film me, I used to do some crazy shit. And she's got me falling pretty hard. I can't imagine we had like a GoPro strap going all...
Oh, my God.
That would have been bad.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the fact of the matter is that some of the shit that we pulled off that, you know, you can't pull off now because the cameras and the social media and everybody's got a phone and everything, we would have been caught so many times. I mean, even to the dumbest things where we were stealing the chromies off of people's cars.
Chromies.
You know, the chrome caps that covered the air valve in the car so we could put them on our bikes.
Yeah, you only need two. Why do we need to steal 50?
And they're not that expensive.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean?
Like they're made out of gold.
Right, they were like plastic, and the expensive ones were out of actually like aluminum. Metal. You know, but they were, again, for two of them, it was like $4.
It's $4 more than I had.
Yeah, no, we spent that much money at Dairy Mart.
Oh, Dairy Mart.
Jesus.
We stole from Dairy
Mart. We stole from Dairy Mart. We didn't spend at Dairy Mart.
So I think all our shit was pretty innocent. See, you know what's funny? When you have someone crazier, that's how I was in elementary. Years. Whenever I was in a class with a kid crazier than me, it would actually cause me to be a little more subdued. Mm-hmm. Like I remember Garza in second grade.
Yeah.
He was crazy as shit. And I was actually less crazy. And then third grade, there wasn't, he was gone. He probably got kicked out. And then I became the crazy kid.
So I guess, I mean, again, I can't say because, you know, do kids go over to other kids' houses and hang out and stuff like that now? Are they stealing from their buddies? Are they stealing from their, or are they just burying themselves? Like, there's the app out there. I can't remember what the name is, if it's just called, like, I don't know. I'm not even going to try and embarrass myself. But there's an app where basically you can have one big, long, never-ending group that people will just get home from work, log in, and or work, school, and they'll log in and just basically hang out over the phone instead of hanging out over Sean's house or Corey's house. And so they're not stealing from their friends. They're not doing that because...
They're not over their house.
No, they're not over their house because they're buried at home.
That's true.
But your where's kids, the fun in that?
But your kid, all your kids are pretty active.
Well, I make them.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that you have to... you as a parent... you have to make sure that they have those opportunities. Like, my kids have iPads, and, you know, there are times where me and Celine look at each other and we're like, dude,
well, you know,
this kid's been on there for...
his kids
right, because they... Right? It's listen, it's addictive, yeah. Right? It's well beyond what they're actually developmentally ready for,
yeah.
And it's like, holy crap, mm-hmm. I got all this stuff right here. They're not ready for that kind of information. So, I mean, we limit our kids' iPad use. Like, you know, my kid used to, like, when he was younger, Jackson would take it to bed and watch a show and fall asleep while watching the show. Mm-hmm. Well, then it turned into him being up for 3 hours watching 50 shows, you know, and Celine's out and I'm out and nobody, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's not good. So he doesn't get it at night. You know, they're allowed to use it in the morning. But, like, during the day, dude, you're outside. We need you outside. We actually had a neighbor comment the other day. It was, like, I think it was last summer. It was, like, she said, you know, it's so refreshing to see your kids outside playing.
Yeah, I guess you don't see kids running around.
Not really. Now, my street has a ton of kids. So, on my street, it actually is pretty cool to see all the kids.
Yeah.
But they're not really doing shit. Like, they're not coming up with, like, creative stuff like we did. And
they're not playing, like, hockey in the street.
They're not playing hockey in the street. They're not playing running yards in their front yard.
They'll play wiffle ball, and they'll shoot baskets. You know, we live on a cul-de-sac, so we have the rim out on the island thing. Mm-hmm. And so they're in the street shooting it, you know. Good. And so that way, I mean, my driveway is a little steep, but that's what they do. And my kids are out there all the time. And they're friends. You know, Rick Thorning's kids, you know, Cameron and Andrew, they're always outside. They're not allowed to sit on their, you know. But you got to limit your kids. And the problem is a lot of times, and we've been guilty of this at times, we've talked about it, is that you're so tired as a parent. And you're so exhausted of dealing with the shit, you know.
Like,
and then you give them an iPad and they're like, oh. And they're
right.
For, like, next thing you know, it's been 4 hours.
Yeah.
You've had 9 beers. You're passed out on the couch. Like, what the fuck just happened to me?
And he just watched another unboxing video.
And your kid has not moved a single inch. He's just been on the iPad. And you're like, wow, I think we messed that up, you know.
Well,
maybe it's like how our parents thought video... Well, not your dad. He was super cool. But thought video games...
Your dad would whoop that ass on video games.
He still does.
But he was such a rare breed. Because it wasn't... I've noticed it's not until... Like, the guys who are, like, barely 50 now...
Yeah.
They play video games with their kids. But our parents... No. Well, your parents...
My parents, no. You know what? To my mom's credit, she loved herself some Tetris.
My mom
and she
too.
Loved herself some Lode Runner on the Nintendo.
My mom never played video games. My dad always did shit with us, right?
Yeah.
We would go outside. He'd be out there with us, you know, no matter what it was. So when video games came out...
I'll play with you.
He's like, I'll play with you. You know, he always played with us. And I thought that was great. I mean, for me, like, I do that with my kids, you know. They need that, you know. They do. Like, I don't know how your guys' dads were. I don't know if they were out in the yard and stuff playing with you all the time, you know, like that. But... You know, I know, that's what I'm saying. Like, my dad was always out there doing stuff.
So, no, my dad, what we were doing was yard work. You know, he played soccer. He was a coach for soccer, championship coach. And I wasn't into soccer when I was little. I never played. And that was the only sport, you know, I was really, he was into. where if we would have done it, you know, in the front yard, whatever.
You dishonored
but
the family.
I dishonored the family. That's why my brother's the golden child.
And he scored the golden goal.
He sits on a throne made of gold and my tears. And so, but it was the, like, the handiwork and the housework and everything where, you know, now that you're old enough to, like, oh, I know how to do that because I used to watch my dad do that. I, you know, so I never really had the one that was out there, you know, playing with me, but he was always, you know, when I'd play basketball or football, to support and everything.
Right. No, I totally get that. Your dad's calves were enormous.
My dad's calves were enormous. My dad played in Italy, second level professional soccer before he got hurt. So, yeah, his calves are massive. Yeah, he was in the second level. So it was their Serie A and Serie B. He played in Serie B. Hmm. Yeah, so it was pretty sweet to know that. And that's he got hurt. And then
makes sense now, doesn't it?
He always coached. Yeah, his calves were as big as our heads.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
No, and they still are.
My dad was all state cross country.
I
only heard about it every day.
My dad threw four touchdowns against for Polk High.
Oh, my dad's got a legit story of him jumping over a Corvette. Like, no, I jumped over it. I'm
like the Kobe video.
Yeah, like
jumped over the Toyota
over sideways.
I think. Listen, you're pretty athletic. And
he was taller than me.
And he was
he was a good state cross country.
I think that's what he kind of saw in me. Is that was the connection. That's why he wasn't a dick to me. Like, you know.
Well, you went to Kennedy.
Which is where athletic-ish.
Yeah, you're into sports, good at baseball, all that. Yeah.
That's what. And I remember him digging out his varsity sweater. Let me see if it still fits. And I'm like, fuck, it doesn't even come close to fitting. Like, but yeah, you're right, Bob. You're good.
Your dad was a little guy. I remember that. He's little like you and Keith in high school.
Kennedy.
Yeah.
No, there was definitely the Kennedy connection. There was the athletic connection.
But then you like Bobby.
Like the athletic connection.
You're pretty much like everyone but you.
But me.
Which probably meant he liked you the most.
Yeah, you know
he
did.
He gave you the most shit.
Look, homeboy wanted to rumble. I came home from Italy one year. I was a little bit taller and I wasn't taking his shit anymore and we nearly broke your stairs for it.
You know what we did break in that living room was the TV. When UFC 1 came out. Remember UFC when it first came out? That was like, we were all into that shit. Were you at my house?
No.
We were wrestling. Yeah, we'd have UFC.
Don't do this
room.
At home. And here we are.
And we'd slam each other so hard that we shook the electronics in the TV. My dad's brand new Sony Trinitron 32-inch, which is the biggest glass TV.
The big-ass tube TV, projection TV.
Trust me, I wouldn't have it if it wasn't the biggest.
Yeah. Oh.
I learned more about electronics and top-of-the-line stuff by getting shit-talked by your dad.
You ain't got one of these. That's how it started.
You ain't got one of these. So I'm like, oh, I have to learn about this. You know, he's got these state-of-the-art computer speakers, and I have the stock speakers. You got that Poke computer? That Pokemon computer?
Yeah, that's the one thing my dad taught us. It was like, that's why my brother's so good at electronics. Because he wired the house with internet before it was even...
So your brother was way ahead of his time, too, because
I
remember...
He was fixing computers, and they were building computers.
In the Allen Park house.
First it was my dad, but then he kind of, like, hit a wall where he couldn't really learn. You know, you get the certain...
Yeah, you peak.
He stopped at Windows 95, and he couldn't really progress.
And Microsoft should have stopped at Windows 95.
And then my brother was doing everything, so yeah, he was...
Well, Keith was the one that... that was the first instance I remember of networking. Like, this kid, this punk kid in high school, back in the, late 90s.
He had all this stuff going on. Yeah, that was when all that stuff was coming. He was like, you buy music? What the hell's wrong with you? And he's like,
I mean, I always say this too, like, so we're 35, Sean's 36, you old fucker. We were in that weird generation that kind of got caught at the tail end of the hardest working generation, that they would just go to work and grind and grind and grind and scrap and save every damn penny to make sure that we had it good. And then the generation after us, that all these great, great new innovations were happening. We were analog, they were digital. And it's a great way of putting it, because they could get rich off of just thinking about, I want to be able to do this, and then they do it. Where we were still at the tail end of, I want to go to school to be a teacher or a print journalist.
Well, and pensions still existed.
Pensions still existed, so you wanted to reach for that.
You saw your parents, and your parents probably moved to a Michigan or downriver that was like booming.
Yeah, yeah. When my dad came here, that's exactly what it was. He moved downriver to work at the steel mill because it was industry and it was manufacturing.
Yeah. And out of high school, got good paint, multi, you know, per hour, whatever, 10, 20, 30.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're all manufacturing. Your dad, yeah. your mom and dad worked at Ford. Your dad worked at GM, and my dad worked at U.S. or National Steel at the time. Yeah. And it was all manufacturing, whereas, like, so we went to school to better ourselves to become...
Well, and they all made good money.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Without degrees.
Without degrees. Right, and then they pushed us to go to college. And this is the biggest farce of our country in the last 20 years is they thought going to college would make our lives easier in the long run.
Yeah.
But that's not the case, right? College is not for everyone, number one. Nope. And number two, they used to be able to work, like, 16 hours a week to pay for full tuition,
yeah,
you know, in the 70s. And we could not do that. You know, tuition was expensive.
No. Nope.
I mean, student loans is a problem, you know.
I was blessed to have my tuition paid for at college. And, you know, I graduated with a degree in public relations only because my journalism degree required a semester-long internship where I would have had to quit my job at the bank. And I was a big baller at 21 years old, and I didn't want to quit my job at the bank because I was going to be a banker the rest of my life. And, you know, that's not the case, obviously. But had I stuck with journalism, who knows? But then journalism doesn't pay the bills. You know, Sean, you talked about there were still pensions back then. And, you know, print media is dying media now.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is the new media, podcasts and blogs and, you know, online, you know, digital media companies and stuff. And, you know, same thing where when Corey, you went to school for teaching and there was, what'd you say, 2,500 people applying for one job.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sean, you went the unconventional route where, you know, you went to college late because you had to figure it out.
I think if I would have gone when I was younger, I would have just got a psychology degree or something.
And then what?
Which Lisa did and was plenty successful in, but she's not doing psychology, you know. But, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I think our parents, they had good jobs out of high school. They made good money. But then they saw people above them that, to them, just had a degree. They weren't smarter, and they probably weren't. And they were like, wow, if I just had a degree, I could have did all this. But they didn't do that because there's all this opportunity up front. So they're like, well, I'll just get my kids a degree, and then they'll be set, and they'll be, you know, running the place.
Right.
The cost goes up, and the percentage of people who have degrees is flooded because now we all have degrees.
Right.
Now you got New York passing laws. Hey, everyone in New York can go to college for free.
Yeah.
That's great. Or at first, someone's got to pay for it, which is a political topic. But then it's like, okay, everyone's... You're just going to have more people with degrees. Do you want more? I mean, we want more educated people, but then it becomes a college degree is just like being in high school.
Right.
So now you're 25 until you're an adult. And why not? You get insurance till you're 26, which we didn't have. You know, we were really shit on, I think, for taking too long. I took like 10 years to get out of college, and I heard shit all these, you know, it's like, I had a house when I was your age and all this stuff. Now it's kind of accepted, like, oh, yeah, you'll probably be 30 until
right.
And blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, I don't know if it's good.
Yeah, but you
know
what?
I don't think that's necessarily good.
I'm not going to knock that you were 10 years out of high school before you graduated because, you know, at least you had the wherewithal to say, look, I'm going to try a semester at college. It wasn't for you.
Well, I didn't know.
School really wasn't ever for you.
Yeah, well. When you don't know what you want,
yes.
Not for you.
Right.
You're just in there wasting time.
Well, I mean, all the gen ed. I mean, that's why I bombed out of Eastern with a 2.1 before I went to Wayne State and I graduated with Dean's List, you know, and because I was in my major courses. So I was interested in the study that I was doing. But, you know, you went the different route. You went to the Marine Corps, which is unconventional, where you finally did realize, oh, you know, I really want to go and strive to go to University of Michigan, which... You know, I'm telling Corey, hey, Sean got into Michigan, and we busted out laughing.
This mother.
He's like, who? Sean? No.
Well, I did do the cheater route, being a transfer.
But you killed it.
It's a little easier.
Yeah, but you still graduated from Michigan.
I did.
You know, and so it goes back to saying, like, everybody goes to college, everybody's got a degree now, where, you know, an employer now has to look at not only a college degree because everybody's got one, but what have you done while you were in college? What work experience have you done?
And I was lucky that I had work experience. So I graduated in 2009, worst time ever. No job prospects in Michigan. I spent 10 years, if you count the Marines, because that was part of my getting my degree. So you spent 10 years getting something, you finally achieve it, and now I'm working at Best Buy. You know, it's like, what the hell? So then, yeah, you'd start being like, school's a piece of shit, fuck all that. Because, and then you'll get cynical like that. And I bet these, there's going to be a lot of kids getting these degrees that, and I had an engineering degree from Michigan. It's, you.
No, I mean, that's a prestigious degree to have. I mean, well, it's nothing to sneeze at.
I don't know if it's
at.
Prestigious, but it's, it's.
Well, it's University of Michigan when you look at these rankings. Yes.
I'm just saying, it's easier to get a job with an engineering degree than
a public relations degree from Wayne State.
And you're going to, and people are going to get those degrees. And I think it's fine if you do it quick and it didn't cost a lot of money. Like maybe when we first got out of high school, it didn't cost that much. It was getting there. But now it's like $100,000 for that?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Riddled with student debt. You know, so you have a candidate that was bringing himself up for the presidency, promising, you know, free college, free college, free college. And, you know, the millennials and the younger generation,
they
jumped all over that because it was, they don't want that debt, which, cool, in theory, that's great. In theory, socialism works too. But how, I just want to get to the nitty gritty and say, how are you going to pay for this college? I want everyone to go to college to get not only the college education and the advanced education that they're going to get in a specific field. But you got to get a college experience and a life experience too.
I think if they want to go to college and they have a sense of what they want to do and not just be there to avoid getting, you know, their parents around their back, because otherwise we just have a bunch of kids in college and it's all this debt. That's like, of course, college isn't for everyone. And,
right.
And I don't think I saw it until I seen our peers who didn't go to college that were actually successful. And I was like, oh. There's a different way, and you were beaten the head over, you know, you had to go to college or you're going to be a bum.
Right.
You're going to be freaking homeless.
I think it's twofold. I think, number one, I think the colleges have a huge role in what's been going on, you know, because they're trying to make money, and it's not an institution to better the country, the society, right? And it used to be. I mean, that's really what it was. You know, you had so few people that went, you know, it was affordable. And the point was, is these were going to be the leaders of society once they graduated. So I think the college play a role, you know, not only in the pricing of it, but also their advising of students. I think it's a farce. I don't know if you guys ever see Mike Rowe and some of the stuff that he puts on there. So I think it's a complete and utter disservice to tell kids and preach to them that they need to go out and find something that they love to do. Because here's my deal. I do like teaching a lot. I'm good at it. I love the relationships I have with kids. And it supplements well with coaching and being part of that stuff. But if I had to choose between teaching and coaching and not having to work at all, I would choose not having to work at all.
Yeah.
I would. I'd find a hobby or something to do that would be my interest. I might not make money at it, but if I didn't have to work for
but
that,
America's
I'd be fine.
Not set up that way anymore.
Well, it should be, because here's the deal.
Oh, yeah. No,
the vocational schools at the high school level are just now starting to come back a little bit. But they were gone for years because nobody wanted, even the kids. Here's
that's
and 50%
that's
of the
like
kids that go
class.
Into college drop out.
That's what we were told.
Listen,
right. They're not.
Right.
Where I live. On the east side, this is a community built on vocation. I mean, they're all tradesmen that have built this community out here.
Yeah.
They're all contractors and carpenters and bricklayers and painters and drywall guys and plumbing guys. No, they're not millennials.
Right. These kids don't think that's the path to success. They're like, I'm not going to make any money. And the truth is, because a lot of people aren't doing that, that's probably you have a better up to be a machinist, to be a 20-year-old machinist or something.
Listen,
how many are out there anymore?
Right. A few years ago, I had two kids that graduated from Kennedy with, they went through the welding vocation program, right? Mm-hmm. They took a certification test the last week of school. They passed it. They both had jobs lined up the day after graduation, making like $55,000 to $60,000 a year for an 18-year-old kid. And that was base.
That's unheard of right now. And that was pretty much the norm. Well, not that amount of money, but like when our parents got out of high school and they knew someone, which we all did. They all knew someone. They had those jobs lined up as long as you weren't an idiot.
My dad started working at Ford the day after graduation. But here's also, my dad worked at a gas station on the corner of Middle Bell and North Line. Remember that old Clark? I think it was a Clark one.
Yep.
He worked midnights there during high school. Worked midnights.
Yeah, I mean, that was unheard of. I mean, I remember when I was working through high school, the hours that I was putting in at the restaurant, the hours that I was putting in at Staples. Like, I don't remember anybody that we went to school with. I worked my ass off in high school.
You always worked. You were the first one I knew that had a savings account. And your mom never let you have your money. And I was like, this is bullshit. That's your money. But yeah. She knew better.
She knew better.
You always had a good savings.
I remember that. Then kids.
I watch those Mike. I see Mike Rowe.
Yeah.
That Dirty Jobs guy.
Yep.
Yeah.
He says a lot of cool stuff with the vote. He says there's like 2 million jobs, you know, out there that nobody's filling. Well, in other countries, they track kids. Yeah, please. They track kids at the age of 12. So by 12 years old, they know, like, this kid's going into a trade. This kid's going the academic route.
Right.
You know?
We're telling 100% of them.
We're telling all of them, no, you can totally follow your dream. I have kids.
Go to college. And just pick something you love.
There's big money in that. If you're a packaging engineer or a packaging designer, there's big money in that.
Clearly. They've done it to every single thing.
Bag of chips used to be 16 ounces. Uh-huh. Now there's 7 ounces, but the bag's the same.
So this isn't a cross thing. So these bottles, do you have bottles here that are shittier than this? Like the ones that crinkle? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Here, where are they? I brought them down. They're right here.
Well, yeah. Okay. I thought that was just a Cali thing, and I was like, I love these bottles in Michigan. So I was getting out of school in 09, and they had a career fair at Michigan, and these fucks had a booth. And I go up to them, and they're like, yeah, we designed the bottles and everything. I'm like, you fucking happy about that? And I was I'm pissed about these stupid bottles, because you get them, and they fall over and shit because the bottoms. I was like, who designed this shit? And I'm like trying to get it, you know, I'm like. Every other place, I'm like, yes, my name is Robert McKee. I'm trying to get a job. There I was like, you fucking assholes. Like, man, you got to reset. Yeah, they're all like, you know, they're the new crop of, because they're younger than me. So they're like the new crop of save the world and shit. And it's like, they save the ecosystem. But I'm like, the motherfucker can't stand up. It can't even do its job.
I can't do the bottle challenge.
Piece of shit.
It's we save the landfill.
I don't want to hear it. So, I don't know.
That's hilarious.
I gave those guys some shit. So
I was a little guy like Yanis Cespedes hitting 440-foot home runs.
Dude, he's a beast. I'm getting alerts right now. Is that happening right now?
Yeah.
Where? On the West Coast?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I love watching sports on the West Coast. I mean, I'll watch some shit, and I'll be like, oh, that's like 11. That's pretty late. And I'm like, damn, who the fuck's watching this on the East?
Nobody. Yeah.
You guys watching Monday Night Football. You either got Monday Night Football, or you're... Or you're not waking up. You know, so like, you got to make a decision.
So let's get into that. So, you know, we on the West Coast, we had a period where we really loved USC football and we loved watching them.
I love Reggie Bush.
And yeah, it was Reggie Bush. it was Matt Leinart and those guys. But we lived out here, so there was that real famous Fresno State game where Reggie Bush they had the sky cam follow him on that big run.
Whoop.
Where he went behind his back and everything. It was late as shit when we watched that game. So for you, when Monday Night Football starts at 6 o'clock or 5:30, when you're not in traffic, you're at home, and then the game is over at a decent time. Where if our kids want to sit and watch sports, the World Series was the best example. Game 7 of the most historically meaning World Series between Cleveland and Chicago ended at 12:47 Eastern time.
Wow. Yep.
Were your kids awake?
Nope.
My kids weren't awake. I was barely awake.
Yep.
And they had a rain delay to boot.
Right.
It's 9:45 for you. I mean, that's great.
Well, I also had the luxury of I don't commute. I live a mile away, and it takes me 5 minutes to get home. And it starts right as you get home. Yeah, 6 o'clock, 9. And then the Warriors games, I don't know who watches those. You got to watch them online. I mean, we're watching them, and those run a little late.
Well, ESPN made no doubt about it this year that they were all over. ESPN's basketball schedule drives me nuts because it's the same 8 teams, which is fine. I get it. Yeah. You got to draw ratings, and as we're enjoying some hummus and tabbouleh and some pita bread here.
That's why I sound like this.
That's fine. Our parents taught us not to talk with our mouths full, and sorry for that.
Video.
Now the internet knows. The Warriors, the Bulls, the Celtics, the Heat, the Cavaliers, the Lakers, the Rockets, Oklahoma City. That's who was on all the time, which is fine. But then there's that 10:30 start, where if your sons, who are in their formidable years, trying to watch basketball, they're in bed for at least 2 hours, so they can't see Steph. They can't see the ball movement, that beautiful, wide-open offense, you know, that, that you probably want to show them.
Your kids aren't watching TV anyways. They're watching YouTube, so they can see it.
Well, I mean, we DVR a lot of stuff. You know, we record it and then be able to watch it the next day. My son wakes up first thing in the morning, turns on the ESPN app, and looks at all the highlights. That's what he does.
I have CSN Bay Area. I can watch all the Dubs games. And that's the only team I love out there. I almost don't watch it because in 9 minutes I could see the game from Exirmo Pirmo, whatever his name is, on YouTube. I don't know how they get away with it, but it's like, it's pretty sick.
Yeah. See, I'm different.
The playoffs and stuff, you'll watch.
I know there's NFL Red Zone, and it's a blessing to really have that. And you, Sean, love Red Zone.
I cut it out. I can't watch. It will really take over. It takes over every Sunday because it's on when I wake up. All the way till 5.
But for me to be able to, I want to sit.
Red Zone's awesome.
And I want to watch the game, and I want to be able to break down what defense they're in, what covers they're in, where this play happened. I don't want to see like, oh shit, this team's in the 20, they're about to score. The big dunk, the big block, the big whatever. I want to be able to really break down the game and say, hey, you know, maybe it's time to move on from this guy. Maybe it's time to, you know, move to a smaller lineup because at this juncture of the game it happened. But that talks to everything on demand, instant, which is fine, but when you get your kids in sports, Corey, you're going to be able to talk about this way more than us two are. They want the Cliff Notes version of it, where you as a coach, I want to be able to explain to them the why. You want to be able to explain to them, you know, during this time we're gonna call for a bunt, or we're going to shift the infield. Where these guys are watching SportsCenter, like you said, Sean, when you wake up and you see all the highlights on YouTube. They don't get that, and they're going to need a coach.
Yeah. Here's the problem. What we have here is we have kids that see the pros do things and make it look extremely easy and cool while they do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of extracurricular things that go on to provide the ratings and stuff like that that these things need. But the kids see that. And then what also is happening is in youth sports around, there is a flooding of travel teams that are popping up, right?
Yeah.
In all kinds of different sports. AAU basketball and baseball and soccer and just about any sport you can think of.
And you feel like your kids are left behind if they're not.
Right. So they're like, oh, we got to do travel. Well, it's not really that much of a superior league. What happens is when you used to have to think the game in no situations, you had multiple coaches along the way as a youth that would teach you these situations, okay? And so by the time like I got to high school, you know what to do with the baseball and when to do things and when to take a chance and when not to, or when to shoot a three, when to slow it down. You kind of knew that. Your coach was still there that would kind of reiterate it as the game was going on, and he would still yell at you if you messed up. It's not like you were playing perfect, you know, basketball or baseball or anything like that. It was you just had a better understanding. And nowadays, these kids are going to teams that are coached by, you know, and I'm not saying daddy ball or anything like that, but a lot of fathers got sick of their kid not playing, and they started their own teams and stuff. And I get it. I totally understand. And I'll be that father, too, where I'm going to coach my kid as much as I can. Now, I come from a background of coaching and coaching well and coaching great kids and stuff like that. So, but I've always been realistic with my kid, you know, about where he's at and what is he doing. But they don't get that constant, consistent coaching of situations. So I have kids right now on my high school team who I love them to death, and they're extremely talented. But, like, today's game, if for example, like, we gave up an unearned run because we ran two or three pickoffs to keep the runner close at first base, right? So then I called a pitch out, and the guy called – our catcher called a curveball instead. Mm-hmm. And then the next pitch I called a pickoff again just to kind of lob it over just like we have been, right? And our guy tried to do the quick step off Steve Avery move, quick pick, and the ball went into the foul territory, and the kid went from first to third, and ended up scoring two plays later on another error, right? And I'm like – I pulled the kid off. I said, listen, why would you do that pick move right there? Like, well, it was really dumb because we're not going to pick that guy off. We just want to keep him close so that he doesn't get to go first to third on a hit. you know?
Sports Center
so he's 10. Like, oh. I said, so why did you pick him off like that? Why didn't you just do it the way that we've been teaching you to do it, you know? And he just didn't understand that situation. And, you know, eventually we ended up winning the baseball game today, but there were so many things that popped up towards the game that us teaching them in practice was literally the first time that they've had it. Like bunt coverages. Like with a man on first, who's supposed to charge the ball? Who's supposed to cover this base? Blah, blah, blah. Some of these kids have told me that they don't even have bunt coverages in summer baseball. Bro, we don't have bunt coverage.
You know,
nobody
so you've got to be freaking out what? Because, you know, AAU gets it's a villain around the country, and
true.
And I'm glad now that people are starting to pick up on it. But that's I've said it before, the glorified mixed one and tape,
yeah.
And one mixtape, and
yeah.
It's Sean. You just said it. You know, I got to make the Sports Center top 10, and I got to get the quick and dirty version. But if you're not learning fundamentals. And you see it on CSN. You're seeing just it's a beautiful brand of basketball that Golden State's playing right now. So if these kids are not seeing a full game, and even if Golden State doesn't score a point, or you know even Duke, you know Duke is another one of those teams where they're the villains, but they play a nice brand of basketball. And it's a wide open offense, so it's based on ball movement and open shot and involve your teammates.
Yeah, and they want to take shots quick. You know, that's their point. They want to shoot a higher volume than the other team, right? Statistically, they'll make more, and that means they're going to win more, right? Mm-hmm. I like the Spurs and the way they run their
Me
stuff.
Me too.
I know, but if you think about it, it's more of an old school, but it's all based on fundamentals.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a little hybrid.
But it's all based on doing things the right way.
But is it though? They still play outside in.
But that's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know, like that's a strategy that you would use. You know, if you have, I just cramped up in my left hamstring. You know,
35.
35 years old.
35.
Time out. I coached 13 innings a day. I stood around a lot.
So what about if I play the millennial? I'll be like a millennial, and I'll be like, okay, when Jordan was around, we were setting up shit and jumping. All we wanted to do is dunk.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
You could be like, I bet, you know, your dad comes outside like, what the hell are you guys doing? Like, how's that going to make you better at basketball? You don't. All you need to care about dunking and juking and doing all this dumb shit in the 90s. Now, you know, you look at kids and you're like, all you care about is shooting, you're chucking threes.
Mm-hmm.
Which ones, you know, are we being hypocrites because we're old? But then chucking threes, they can actually do. We're dunking.
This is my observation on it. We still had coaches that coached the game and coached it well. And AAU was not this huge thing where it was like we're going to play seven games on a Saturday type of thing. It was we're going to practice 5 days a week and we're going to play like two games.
Oh.
You know? That's how it kind of was, you know. We're going to do this.
So they're not practicing that much.
They're playing more games than
it's
they
all
are
about
practicing.
Games, getting exposure. You know,
exactly. That's what it comes down to. So these kids are they same thing. They want to chuck up threes, but they don't understand what went into getting that open shot in the pros, or the amount of time it took Steph Curry to be able to perfect a shot where he can just launch, or Clay Thompson can just launch it wherever. They don't get that kind of stuff. But like we saw Jordan dunk, and we wanted to dunk. But we also saw Magic Johnson and how to pass.
Yeah.
And we saw Jordan how to do, you know, once he got a little bit later, how to do the turnaround fadeaway.
Well,
Larry Bird was an excellent passer, too. I mean, if anybody – I mean, you talk about – people talk – it's funny. You hear about, you know, like Chris Webber, and you think automatically of that the timeout. He was a great passing big man.
He was.
But Larry Bird was incredible as well. I mean, that guy – to be able to pass the way he did and shoot the way he did, he was light years ahead of his time too. Because now you got all these bigs that are sitting on the perimeter and shooting. But so it was the the Bird and Johnson era that begat the Jordan era. And now, you know, Sean, I think to answer your question was, yeah, we're hypocrites. And we're the ones that will live on, you know, back in my day, Michael Jordan.
Well, I think if I emulated Jordan, and for my size, I shouldn't be doing fallback jumpers. I shouldn't be – the way he moved was a little slower than I should be moving. Like, and I watched some of the guards today with the what's the shot where they roll up and they the teardrop or whatever?
Yeah.
I never learned that. I never saw it back then. That would have been an awesome shot. I see all these small guys like Isaiah Thomas and all these people doing – I'm like, that's the stuff I should have been doing. But, you know, I got hooked on Jordan just like – Like, so maybe if I was a kid right now and got hooked on Curry, it probably would make me a better basketball player.
Yeah, but at the point, Jordan. Get hooked on Curry, which
I'm just
is fine.
From the other side.
But understand the team offense that gets involved where he can shoot a 35-footer with ease and make it all the time. Understand that he probably shoots that shot 100 times a day.
You're saying the practice and the organization is
I think
what the kids like.
I think it's something that's missing nowadays overall. And so when you see the kids that want to do the highlight stuff, they don't understand because they haven't done the practices. And stuff. They don't understand that, hey, Jordan ran a triangle offense. And if you don't understand how difficult it is to run a triangle offense, watch the Knicks.
Yeah.
Right?
Well,
you have Carmelo Anthony, who's one of the premier scorers in the last decade in the league. And he can't figure it out.
Handcuffed.
He can't figure it out.
Well, it's a dead offense, too.
Well, it's only a dead offense because they don't know how to run it. You know, is it going to be the offense of the early 90s like it was with Jordan? No, but Kobe and Shaq ran it well.
Yep.
And you know why they ran it well? Because Kobe learned it and decided he was going to try to do it well.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why it worked. You know, and so nowadays we don't have that. Like youth coaches go out and it's all about the games and stuff, and they try to coach up the best they can in the games. I also don't think there's enough like professional development for coaches in that situation. So these kids are going in with an unrealistic expectation of how it's going to go, and there's nobody there to really help direct them towards how it should go, you know?
Well, I think if I was on AAU or something like that, it's almost like too much spotlight. Like you don't play or something, you're on your high school team or something.
Right.
But if you practice a lot, I actually got more enjoyment out of football practices than the game. Like, the games were cool, but it seemed to go so quick.
Yeah.
Even if you were the main running back, I mean, you got a couple touches.
Well, in practice, we used to be able to run offense and defense.
Yeah.
We went to a school where we were platooned to one side of the field. You practiced as a DB and a running back. I practiced as a tight end and a defensive end.
I only did that one year, though.
But come game time, we were only one side of the field, where Corey, you played both sides of the field. So, of course, practice and the games might be different than what we played, Sean.
Yeah, it was fun. Like,
I loved practice. I did.
I played both ways and stuff. Practice was fun, but the games were great. I mean, that's why we did all the things that we did, because we wanted to perform during a game, you know, where everybody's watching, and you know, to see if you actually practiced the right way and could do it in a game, you know, when you had to. And so I love practicing. You know, football was one of my least favorite practices, you know, but basketball and baseball were my favorites. But playing in a football game is rarely matched by any other sport.
No, I mean, the adrenaline that you have. I mean,
you go out there, you're only have to, scoring a touchdown, I mean, it's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
But they went really quick.
Yeah.
But then because you have 5 days of hours of practice
but if you've got the right coaches that are coaching you up and coaching you the right way, then you get that much more out of a practice. Where if you're sitting with another coach who's with an archaic offense or an archaic defense that can't adjust to the coverages or whatever, or the reads, you're not going to go anywhere. And then when you're getting blown out during the games, it's not fun. Where if you can learn during practice, and, you know, it may sound cliche or whatever, but, like, I wanted my coach to kind of teach me how to, you know, be a man and react and, like, you know, how I should be, too, you know, in real life. But we didn't get that, and we were 1-8, whatever. We scored 35 points all year long. We beat you, Corey.
You did.
I felt like the teams we played against were...
And they were.
They practiced more against our offense than our defense did.
Yeah, but remember who we played. Allen Park perennially every year. But that was a system that started in their junior football to their junior high to their high school.
That's
where, Corey, you played for the Cobras and you played against the Mustangs and everything. Were Kennedy and Truman feeding off of that?
Never.
Were they running the same offenses?
No. Now, they did try it years later when I was already an adult and coaching myself. They did try to run that where it was similar systems moving on up.
Yeah.
But the kids in Taylor were so transient that they were learning the system as 8, 9, 10, 11-year-olds and going to a different district anyway.
I think you said on another podcast about playing multi-sports, and I always thought I was a bit behind because I started playing football in like 10th grade.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And I was like, crap, you got, you know, Bobby and all these other kids. They're totally ahead of me. They've been playing. And if it's not a continuous system, they're really not.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you're set up, that's more wear and tear on your body
too. Absolutely.
So yeah. I think I had some decent success because I never got hurt. I got lucky and also didn't come in all beat up. And I look at my wife doing one thing, being a ballerina for like 10, since she was 6 to like 24 or right. something. And the joint, like doing the same thing, one sport. I don't know anyone that does one sport that long that is okay.
Right.
Tennis, all these things. It's also asymmetrical or just wearing things out.
Agreed.
And it's great to switch. And I think that's, other than me falling like an idiot at Lake Tahoe on my shoulder.
Yeah.
I think that's why I was injury free for so long. Switching, you know, or you just get lucky and it's switching.
Well, there's no better example to look at that than who's sitting right here is Corey. I mean, he played everything and excelled at everything. Where me and you, maybe we focused on one or two sports. So Corey was able to control his body. He learned that from his dad. He learned that from his coaches.
But he was playing like official team stuff way earlier than we were. Yeah. Just screwing around.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. out on the street, and he was playing legit ball. All three sports.
Well, you stopped playing with us for a while because
yeah.
you knew it was going to screw up your progress where we were yeah. just fucking around.
Well,
it
was like, a chance to get hurt. We're yeah. playing like with rocks and shit.
Yeah,
like.
It was at the beginning of high school and stuff. And let's be honest, I mean, we were playing football, but those other kids weren't playing football. And I didn't really trust someone not falling into my
yeah.
knee.
Yeah,
or
not knowing how to hit the right way.
Or, you get
old and fast and yeah. you can hurt people then.
You know, and I never like... I truly never really tried to run anybody over when we were playing, you know, the pickup games and stuff.
Oh,
like
you'd
that.
Kill. You would have killed.
I would have hurt somebody, yeah, you know, yep. doing that, or I would have hurt myself doing it. You know what I mean? Without
and you
pads
knew you
on.
Had the instincts, and right. I started to feel that too. When after we played football for a while, you'd start lowering your shoulder, and
yep.
you'd be like,
yep.
"What the fuck?"
Turning your head.
Yeah. Like I yeah. better
well,
knock
what,
it off.
What I noticed about you guys is one we did it. I would still play it sometimes in high school with you guys, and what I did notice was as we got older, you know. You guys started playing football in a little bit different. It wasn't so out of the control.
Yeah.
You know, you guys were in control with what you were doing. You know, you understood what needed to be done. It was the other kids that I was really worried about because I couldn't trust
yeah,
them.
Yeah, none of the other ones we played with played. And, again, weren't getting the proper coaching on the technique and
right.
everything.
Right.
Are they getting that now? Or are
they
watching SportsCenter and YouTube?
No, they're getting the technique now in football is it's way better than it was when we played.
Sean, if you had kids, would you let them play football?
Almost. If that was maybe the only thing they wanted to do, I don't know. I don't know if I could say, because I remember being a kid and my mom was like, you're too small, you're going to get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, shut the hell up. Well, I'm doing backflips off a ramp. I mean, how much more hurt am I going to get? I don't know. I think I liked the only sport my parents ever pushed me to was baseball. And I got on a team where I was a small kid and I didn't know anybody and I got blasted in the eye and I never liked it. And they were like, you can be rich playing baseball, blah, blah, blah. Once that happened, I think they kind of backed off and they're like, well, let's just let him do whatever he wants to do. Because they were like, let's go to practice. And I was like, I'm not going. And throwing a fit and shit. So they backed off and then I just found sports on my own and we were just out playing. And I loved playing football because, like, I loved going to Corey's house and his dad would come out and be like, you got some moves, kid. And I was like, really? Because, like, you know, I like, he's a coach. He, like, knows.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, you'd be pretty good. And I was like, oh, my God, I could be like Barry Sanders. If only my mom wouldn't hold me back. So, yeah, I would like to play.
We, I became self-aware with sports and everything, like, in 89 when, you know, Michigan won the basketball national title.
Like, you're like artificial intelligence.
Well, I mean, just, you know, one of these days, you know, Cyberdyne Systems is coming. I'm ready. And I just remember, like, that's when I really started getting into sports and remembering, you know, the nuances of sports. And it was 89, and, you know, Michigan had won the national title in basketball, and the Niners blew out the Broncos. And, you know, you start to form, like, oh, I love basketball, and I really want to play like how David Robinson plays. And you guys know that that was my yeah. guy back in the day. And I was left-handed just like him. And I would, you know, my parents never pushed me towards a particular sport. They liked that I played, and I was always the taller one, so I played basketball. But I never had, you know, never had a coach or whatever say, like, okay, you're left-handed, and, you know, post up like this. And, you know, if you really – I watched David Robinson to learn how to play basketball.
Yeah, I think they probably have a – Corey could probably – I mean – they teach you a little bit better than... Yeah. I just feel like, but then we're sixth graders and fifth graders. How much are you really going to, you know...
Right.
Like, I remember them telling me things, and I'm like, shut up, I'm going to be like Jordan, you know? Yeah. Double pump this shit, you're like 5 foot tall. Like, what the hell are you doing? Just make a layup, kid. Like,
right. Right.
Just trying to get some fun... You can't even get fundamentals drilled into me. What am I... You're not going to teach me...
Which is right, because you're still in sixth grade, and you should still be a kid. Because if you start to get way too structured, you know, you stop your creativity, and you stop the natural development as well.
Well, and it stops being fun.
Well, yeah. You see these kids that are mechanical. Yeah. And I see it when I play tennis. Kids that grew up and that have sent to, like, teachers and stuff like that, and they just look so mechanical. They, like... There's only so far they can go, because it's like... You can tell they're, like, thinking every stroke. It's like, left, up, down, right. It's like, what the hell? It's not flowy.
Tiger Woods is probably the first example of that, where that kid from birth became mechanical because his dad was putting him out there.
I wouldn't call him mechanical. But,
well, no, I would say so, because finally when the guy had adversity... You know, the kid never was taught probably how to overcome adversity. He probably was taught, this is how you swing, this is how you hit the ball 300 times a day, whatever. And, you know, whatever happened that night with the Escalade and the golf club and then now all of his injuries, it doesn't seem like he's been able to adapt. And that's more of a mechanical byproduct, that he hasn't been able to, in his head, say, well, this is the way I was taught all my life. Why should I have to adjust? Everything will just come back. Well, it's not. It's not going to come back.
Well, I think you hit on two different things, though. I think the mechanical part of it is a good thing if you're going to be Tiger Woods. But the second part of it was adversity. And I think that kind of is more in tune with probably what happened with him than the mechanical issue. Now, I know, you know, some of the adversity happened, and when mentally you're not prepared to be the best, to play like he should have been, you will manifest those issues physically. It's not just going to be mentally. And so what happened was he started going to see other swing coaches, and he started to try to swing, you know, change his swing and do this and do that. And at the time, everybody kind of thought, oh, he's being proactive. He knows he can always get better, kind of thing. And I don't think that's really what it is. My thought on it is that he had lost a little something mentally, you know, and couldn't get past it. And so he started reaching out for help to help fix something physically, because in his mind, that's what he felt. He felt the physical part kind of getting away from him, but it wasn't caused from a physical issue. It was caused from adversity. Then you couple with the injuries, right? And then that changes the whole game, because now you're not mentally strong and you know, you have all these injuries that you got to contend with.
And he stopped banging cocktail waitresses.
No, that'll mess you. Well, look at Steph Curry. He changed his jump shot, but he wasn't in a decline. He was still young enough to change something like that. Like tennis players, they don't even change rackets their whole career. Once they have success, they're like, that's it. Only one I know, Mr. Federer.
So you beat me to it. And let's talk about overcoming adversity and overcoming your challenges. At 35 years old, Federer is playing better tennis now than he has probably in the last 4 years.
A lot of it has to do with his racket. It does.
And we got a bigger racket.
His bigger racket. And when you played your whole life with a certain size frame, because he played with Sampras's frame, that's who his idol was, and then he switches, and then you're at the top of the game. When you're like Curry, and he changes his jump shot, what was he still like? He didn't even go to college yet.
Yeah.
You can do that because you're not always trying to win all the time. And like you're saying, like these kids that are in these... When it's all these games, you're always trying to win. You're always trying to win. You don't have this break time to work on your shit and change something when it needs to be changed. So Federer, that was tough. I can't believe he pulled it off, but enough time with the racket. And he had that break because his knee, he had to. Mm-hmm. It's the best thing that's ever happened.
Well, I mean, at 35, you've got to take a break. No, he's in the middle of an eight-week break where he's not going to come back until clay season.
Because even though he's like killed it and beat everyone, he realized the break I had before this is why I'm successful. Mm-hmm. And let's not go chase a number one. That doesn't matter. What matters is me being rested, working on my game, coming back refreshed, 100% for that tournament.
I was reading something online the other day that I couldn't help but agree with, and it was on The Ringer. And I'm sorry for me not remembering the writer, but it just made total sense where... You know, Federer has managed himself so well, where now you've got the other guys that are coming into the twilight of their career, where Djokovic, his main rivals, Djokovic and Andy Murray, and even Wawrinka, are starting to come to the end of their They're in their post peak.
Yeah.
Where Federer has reached a level where we haven't seen before.
Well, they were thinking this Federer guy, he'll be gone. You know, I'm gonna outlast him because I'm way younger. I'm 5 years younger. I'm Nadal, and look at Nadal. You know, he's doing well.
But even he's smart too because he's taking a lot of time off and training differently. Yeah. I mean, that guy, it was almost the Tiger Woods effect going back to him where he was really heavy into lifting weights in his body physique where maybe in golf or tennis, you don't need to be that big. Yeah, you want a big swing and a big stroke and you're going to need muscle for that. But if it's going to start affecting your body's ability to recover or your body's ability take impact.
That's what I'm coming to mechanic. Like his mechanics are not that good for sustainability. Like he's banging his knees. The way he plays, it's just too rough. And to play at his high level, his practices are like straight up matches. He's out there sweating, beating the ball around. Federer, he's just like, all right, let's just warm up the arm a little bit. The way he prepares, that's why he's lasted so long. He plays, he floats around, he practices light. But when he does train without the racket, it's hard, you know, like cross country, you know, they're working on all that training that's not tennis related. I think that's why he's lasted so long.
Well,
and when you're these kids and you're not playing games all the time and you're working on your strength,
right.
I think that's why I got hurt because my muscles weren't built up. You know, if your strength, your practice and your weightlifting, all that extra stuff is, you got to almost do half of that, half of practice and like 10% game. I mean, that's 110%.
I want to play devil's advocate and talk about Serena Williams and her playing style, but I think what you just talked about, Sean, should go to Corey where... That's the multi-sport athlete who's constantly in that grind where fall, winter, spring, you're always in a sport. How do those kids...
But see, like in tennis, you get asymmetric. You're only working on one arm. Maybe you're Federer, you're right-handed. You know, this arm doesn't do anything. And then you're always... Like, I have this dent in my side because I'm right-handed. So my ab gets huge here and then nothing here. So, like, if you're playing multi...
abs. What a dick!
What are those?
I got one dent.
I had seen pictures of those before.
The rest is soft tissue, but then
very soft on me.
But then, when you're I think we played football. It was cool to go in the gym, you know, work out, play in bat. Like for my arm.
We went to the gym for the wrong reasons. And Corey, don't skip on the multi-sport thing.
Yeah.
We went to the gym for the wrong reasons. We wanted to grunt louder than the next guy next to us, or we wanted to make sure we maxed out. But was that really helping us? Because point, when you're playing sports, a sport like tennis, a sport like football, you have to have, and we'll revisit what you and I talked about before, Corey, was control of your body. So maybe it's not about strength so much.
I think you're focused on control of your body.
Because I think he hit a home run because you're going to injure yourself.
Yeah.
There's control, but there's also the cross training and the.
No, well, and I think, or here's the
strengthening.
Well, let's think of it this way. It's a proven fact that strength training works, okay, if you do it correctly.
Yeah.
But the vast majority of people that lift are not.
You can
right?
also hurt yourself.
You can also hurt yourself. And if you're not doing it correctly, and I would say under a supervision of someone who's a strength and conditioning coach to at least guide you, then, and it can't just be some meathead that, I played college football and I lifted a lot of weight, so now I can teach people to lift weight.
Look at my,
that's not what we're talking
circumference.
About. What I would say is this, I barely lifted weights in high school and I was a pretty good athlete. I was pretty strong. Mm-hmm. Now I had a different body type than both of you, but I played sports all year round and I went from one sport to the next and I didn't. There was no baseball all year round stuff back then, you know. We just played. We did things. Now, we played a lot as kids, and so a lot of our body control was built from the front yard and playing in the, you know,
the falling,
no one knows how to fall anymore
because they don't have
the body control to move their body in a free fall, you know. Like we would get tripped up and none of us were just smacking faces off of stuff all the time.
That's why
I mean?
Say the mechanics, like they can go. They can ground a ball and go like this and do that. But then, like, any ad lib or something outside the norm, like,
absolutely.
Guys coming at you, where do you move?
Right.
Yeah, they probably like,
That's where being a multi-sport athlete, I think, comes in is it gives you all those different movements that your body's prepared for.
Well, I used to get shit from my football coach because I'd show up at, like, all skatered out in my rollerblades. I'm like, I'm going to grind fucking rails after this. And he's like, what the hell are you doing? Because all these coaches, they just want you to be, back then, you know, it's like, they just play football, that's it.
Right,
you're
going
to get yourself hurt. I'm like, and you know what? Doing all those rail grinds and all that, I will never twist an ankle in my life. Yeah. I can sit there on the side of my ankle and just hang. Because, you know, skating and then learning how to fall and then learning. Skating with some crazy control.
Yeah.
And then I took that kind of balance and everything into being a running back. And then track, I got my feet speed really quick. And then basketball. I think basketball is why I was so good out of the backfield catching balls. I'm like, it's completely basketball.
Yeah.
Any good running back. Or any good, you know, that's why all the tight ends are ex-basketball players. Mm-hmm. Everyone who can catch has played basketball and hand-eye is like,
yeah.
I mean,
it's
like, think of football. How many times are you catching a ball? Baseball, maybe a little more. Basketball, it's like, you're throwing it, you're passing it, and it's all these ad-lib. It's not like mechanical, right. I always catch it here, I always throw it here. It's like,
you have to adapt. You have to be able to adapt.
It takes, you know, the eye-hand coordination in basketball, and you can make the argument with baseball trying to hit a 90-mile-an-hour fastball and catching line drives that are moving and stuff. You need eye-hand coordination, right? But basketball, you're handling the ball almost every possession. The ball's getting moved around. You're catching and feeding and doing all this stuff. Baseball, you might make, on a good day, 3 plays, you know, in a game.
With your brother, he probably played a lot of sports you did. My brother, he was like Lisa, you know, hockey for life.
Yeah.
Like he played hockey. So he's a crazy-ass skater. He's a badass on ice. Any other sport, you can tell where, like, you know, I'm not dissing on my brother, but, you know.
Right, no.
Going to football, catching, playing basketball.
Right.
He's
raw and less polished. And
yeah, on ice, it doesn't really show up, but I bet if he played all those other sports, it would it would enhance his
game. It reminds me of, you know, if you put a baseball player in any other sport, they'll compete.
Yeah, the smartest. To me, baseball players are the smartest players.
Right, but if you take like a basketball player and ask them to go up there and hit a 90-mile-an-hour fastball, that dude's not touching the ball.
Mm-mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just not happening. Or if you ask a football player to go out there and do that, you know, it's just not. It's not going to happen.
Actually, tennis players are good baseball players.
They are. They are. You know,
James Blake, he was hitting home runs.
Well, it's the hip. It's the shoulder-hip separation and all that stuff that causes.
And you got to coordinate all your movements, where as opposed to football, you got to have form when it comes to blocking, or you got to have form when it comes to tackling. Everything else is almost like a freestyle. Mm-hmm. You know, you know your route that you got to run, or you know your block that you have to block, but it's form in golf, it's form in baseball, it's form in tennis, where you have to coordinate your hip, your shoulder, and your core movement.
You picked up tennis racket, played tennis. I couldn't believe it.
I was pissed.
Hitting like rocket serves and.
Well, I mean, it was fun. I had never played before, and
it is always fun whooping our ass, isn't it, Corey?
Well, it was fun because it was competitive. Like when I first started playing, I am
the best tennis player.
You are. So. You're better than all of us.
Go to hell.
That's the only thing. It is so weird. I picked that up when I was like 23.
I remember.
And I actually am as good as I am now. I got that good in a year and a half.
Yeah,
but I never got. You know, it's really hard to get better than that. But like in that you first peaked. Year and a half,
but that's fine. Because
it's
that's
really
your,
fast.
Listen,
it was like
that's
crazy.
Because that's your personality. When you get into something, you dive in
like
full force, just like
no. It goes back before snowboarding in fifth grade when you would cut out the Toys R Us ad with the Fast Tracks remote control and laminate it with the tape and everything. Like,
I want this,
and Mr. Schreiber's telling us like, Sean, you need to pay attention, and you're paying attention to that Fast Tracks. And then when you finally got it, it was almost so anticlimactic by the time you got it.
Yeah.
You know, the Super Nintendo, where you had the Super Nintendo jug to raise the money to buy it, and it was anticlimactic when you got it.
That was Mortal Kombat 2 fund.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Mortal Kombat 2 fund.
But that's how you are. Like, you dive into it, and so you can get really good at something when you're putting almost all of your time and energy into it that you have available. And tennis was like that. I mean, you were going to Groseal and playing on the clay, and you brought me out there a few times, you know, and I had a blast doing it, but I wasn't going to be able to put the kind of time that you were. I mean, you were like watching on TV and studying and doing this.
I was going against the wall. My mom lived on that little. I was living there all the time going to school, and she had like this building they weren't working
half,
the day, and I was just hitting balls. Yep. And I would do that shit, like, we'd get the basketball, and I'd make this fucker play out in the snow for hours just because we got done watching Jordan.
All I wanted was a glass of chocolate milk. I just wanted to go inside.
I hear you.
And Sean would say, all right, if I hit the next 3 free throws, because, again, that was his stage. He was super into basketball, which maybe is the counter argument to the multi-sport athlete, where if you engage yourself into just one focus. But if I hit these next three free throws, you can get your chocolate milk, fat ass. He'd hit the first, he'd hit the second, and then totally throw the third one into the neighbor's yard.
I tried, dude. I tried.
We had the worst fucking language as kids. Like, I remember you fat ass.
Yeah.
You know?
You're talking
sixth
to the
grade, Aaron Stewart. You remember that at the table? Hey, what's the answer to number 12? 12. What the fuck are you talking? What's the answer to number 12?
You know, your kids are going to school talking just like us.
Yo, I hope not, but yeah. You're right.
But
hopefully they're as funny as we were.
So after, you know, that singular focus, maybe Sean's the counter argument to that.
Well, I think personally that if you focus on one sport, you are going to get better quicker initially.
There's going to be a
plateau.
Basketball, it stops at your physical ability and what you can do. And I put in probably more time in basketball than any other sport, and I wasn't even good enough to I made ninth grade and I kind of rode the bench.
Right.
Whereas football, I started in 2 days or
right.
I'm just gonna play defense. I was actually scared. I was like, I'm just gonna chill in the back and blah blah blah. Started running the ball and they're like, oh, you're fucking running back right now.
Yeah.
And you just and then it's more fun, you know. That's how when I was a kid and played baseball and got hit in the face, I was terrible at it.
So what's the hardest sport to pick up now, Corey? You've coached pretty much all of them. What do you think as a kid, first breaking into sports? What's the hardest one to pick up now?
Well, it depends what their background is.
Yeah. Well, if they have no background, my daughter's starting baseball this year. After she did a summer of tennis, she's done gymnastics and dance, and I'm telling Giovanna, it's like, all right, you know, Giovanna, I just want you to learn how to catch the ball so you can defend yourself. I'm not worried about you hitting. I'm not worried about you.
I think
of
Lisa.
You know,
I swear, she never caught a ball or you got to edit the sound.
Right. Well,
I was going to say, I think it's different depending on the talent level of the athlete, right, in terms of being athletic. I think if it's a great athlete, I think, honestly, baseball would be one of the tougher sports to do, you know, because it there's so much that goes into it.
Yeah.
But I think basketball is something that you can pick up pretty quick. I think football you can pick up pretty quick.
Yeah,
you know, and you look at those two sports at the highest level, and you know the best athletes are usually the best players, and that's how it kind of goes. And baseball's not always like that. You know, your best players aren't always your best athletes.
Is baseball more cerebral?
It is, but it's also more fine tuned. Like the room for error. There's so much failure in the game of baseball. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're shooting 50%, you know, basketball-wise, you're doing pretty good.
You get a lot of feedback in basketball as a young kid.
Yeah.
You can dribble. You can pass. Good job, good job, good job.
Uh-huh.
You make a bad shot.
Well,
baseball,
I mean, there's
like you're
room,
waiting.
There's room on a roster for
you.
You
either fail or,
well, there's a lot of
you're, freaking out.
There's a lot of discipline there, and there's a lot of handling adversity and handling failure the correct way. Now, that's if you're a good athlete. If you're, a not-so-good of an athlete, you know, you're not particularly fast, you're not particularly strong, you're not particularly big. Baseball at that point, I don't think would be the hardest sport to pick up. I think it would be something that where you're going to be competing against other athletes, you know, they're going to be much farther along than you. So I think at the youth level, sometimes basketball and football, it's really the survival of the most athletic, you know,
raw.
and that's how it goes. So if it would be hard to pick up the game, but baseball would be easier because it's more of a level playing field in terms of athletes. And the game isn't situated to cater to athletes. It's to cater to situational things, you know?
You can get over. You can beat a better athlete.
Well, look at Victor Martinez. The dude can't run. You know what I mean? He can't play the field. And yet he's, you know, a great hitter, you know? And he's still in the lineup every single day. He's a DH.
He's a DH.
But that's what I'm saying. In baseball,
You can find a little niche within the game.
He's not even an athlete anymore. Yeah. You know what I mean?
We're going to lose Sean here because I want to talk about this. I'm really frustrated with the Tigers now.
They're in first place? Yeah,
okay,
I hear you.
Okay, stop. Okay, here's the ultimate pessimist Salmena because I want to be pleasantly surprised by a good performance. But look, you said it. He can't run. He can't field. Miguel's getting there too.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? You're going to take two of your three best hitters out of the lineup?
Nope.
Or one of your three best hitters out of the lineup?
One.
What are you
going to
do? Yeah, because you got a DH1 and the other one can't play the field anymore.
No, but you can DH someone else.
And then what? you're exposing yourself on defense.
I'm looking at it from the perspective that Victor's not going to be there very long.
Sean, like baseball. Why the fuck can't you like baseball?
I actually do in the playoffs. It's pretty fun. I watched the, and I don't like the Giants, but I watched that Bumgarner run through the playoffs. And that was amazing.
You just brought him up.
It's such a, like, on your edge, like, every pitch mattered, and it's like, we could win, or they could just run off, like,
four. Right.
I'm like, it's really intense. Like, baseball's cool. Yeah, and the Cubs, that was cool. I mean,
why can't other pitchers be like Bumgarner at the plate?
Well, I mean, it comes down to being an athlete.
Yeah, the guy's
like, it comes down to Jake Arrieta is like
Madison. He can mash. Yeah, he can mash.
Dude hits 430-foot home runs, you know. I think, honestly, it just comes – most of those pros had played another position and hit, you know, when they were in high school, and some of them even did it in college, you know. But some of those guys also just have a really good arm, and they've been able to hone that skill. But the vast majority of them have played other positions and have played the game of baseball for multiple, you know, positional things. You know, whether it was like Rick Ankiel, who was a pretty good outfielder, he pitched and stuff like that in college, and he played played a position, and then he goes to the pros, he pitches, loses it, goes down in the minors, reinvents himself as an outfielder, comes back and plays in the pros. They're doing it right now with Anthony Gost. Dude can't hit at the major league level, but he's got an arm. So now they're trying to transfer him into being a pitcher.
Incredible.
You know?
That's got to be a hard transition.
It is, but if you have a good arm and you're coordinated enough to be able to feel the minor movements in your motion, you can make yourself a decent pitcher.
Where does it start? Because in all through Little League and all through maybe high school too, where you're not pitching, so it's your off day of pitching, but you're going to play shortstop.
Right.
Where does the platooning start?
Where at, you know, at college, it starts in college. You know, I mean, I went in and they wanted me to be a dual player. They wanted me to play third and pitch, and that was fine. But it became a lot because the expectations of how you work at each position it's a lot more. Like, you really got to put the time into it, you know. And so I was having to run conditioning for pitchers and position players, and that's just a lot, you know. And I couldn't do it, so. They made me just a pitcher after a while, and that sucked because I was a pretty good hitter, and I think I could have developed into a really good hitter at that level, you know, which is kind of a problem. But at the same time, is you have larger rosters at that point. So having pitcher-only people, you know, that's a good thing because now their job is to come in and throw whatever their role is, whether it's long relief, short relief, or a starter. And then they have their X amount of days of rest where they need to prepare to be ready for the next one, you know. And it's tough, you know. That's a tough situation too. But, you know, when it comes down to platooning at the pro level, I mean, you're starting to see pitchers now pinch hit, you know. And that's pretty cool to see because for a while pitchers were like, they were looked at those weirdos, you know. All they can do is pitch. They're not very good athletes, blah, blah, blah. And then there's been a few guys that have come out and kind of proven that wrong.
Sean, you go ahead.
No, good.
No. Go ahead.
You mean Bumgarner? What he could hit?
Or? He can hit really well. I mean, he's an he. I mean,
I like.
Was it two home runs on opening day?
Two home runs
on opening day.
I think that guy. I mean, yeah, he's a freak athlete, but the mental side, like that's what I like. Just like, you know, what Fetter did, or when these guys are up and they just like, it's all on the line, and they just kind of zone in and like, And you don't know until you get there. Like, they've done this their whole life. They might be the best ever, and they come up to it, and it's the World Series, and it's like, or, you know, or they, like, rise up, and you're like, holy shit. And they probably amaze themselves. Like, that, yeah, that's what I appreciate.
You've worked with kids playing tennis and things like that.
Yes.
And
I've coached kids, yeah.
So when you look at a kid, and you're not crazy about the way that they're holding the racket, or if it's a two-handed backhand or one-handed backhand and things like that, how do you approach that?
So tennis, I think it's really hard. Tennis is not fun until you can hit the ball back and forth. I think it's one of the hard, whereas basketball, you can dribble around, screw around, and like you
can do it by yourself.
Yeah, tennis, you got to have someone. You got to be able to hit the ball, and they got to be able to hit the ball, or you just run around and kids get bored, and I've had enough of this. So, you know, if yeah, you send the kids to a camp, and the most important is probably the way they hold the racket and hitting it correctly. But then, you know, they don't have strong wrists. I like that they came up with the mini courts where it's got, like, the foam ball, and it's, like, a, it's not, like, the full size. You'll see it advertised on the U.S. Open. They're like, oh, kids play or whatever. Because, yeah, kids hitting that ball with a main, with a big racket, that's a lot of, like, force. So what they do is choke up, and they, you know, they got your type of grip. It's all, like, mangled as hell. Or, and I had that, too.
You know? I am a good tennis player. Go to hell.
See, well, the thing is, and you can be good with a bad grip. It just, you develop, you know, that's how everyone that's gets tennis said. Elbow. That's why... that's why you see the old people. So old people, they always got the wraps on the elbows, that's and then they get the oversized racket that shoots all the vibration to your arm. You know, you just look at it like, oh, that's just.
I gotta go, dude. That, on that note, I have to get out of
come
here.
Come on,
I gotta go, dude.
It's early.
I know it's damn near.
All right,
Sean. All right.
Look around.
Well, Corey, thanks for coming today. I appreciate you coming out. Obviously, the crux of this show, our better conversations are between the three of us because we can just keep free flowing. So, Corey, absolutely. Thanks for coming out. Thanks, you have an hour drive home.
Yeah.
Do you want another espresso?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. We'll take care of you.
And now it's 4 a.m.
And now it's 4 a.m.
I got to take my ass home.
Sean's got to drive an hour home.
But it's so, actually 1 a.m. So
it's actually 1 a.m.
on the West Coast.
Which so makes,
I'll be okay.
Which might actually be late. Sean, you wrapped it up. Thanks for coming out. It's been too long. The last couple times you came out to Michigan, we didn't see each other, but now we did. And I got to have friends this week.
I made up for it.
You made up for it. Man, you really did. It was a long, long time. So
now next one, you can stick this in your suitcase and come out to Cali.
Come out.
Come out to Cali.
August.
And we'll do a podcast from San Francisco.
From San Francisco.
The first and last one.
First and last. And then Colorado Springs.
Sure.
Or Arizona, or
or the next place I throw a
Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
I close my eyes and point my finger at.
Throw a dart at the map, see where it lands. All right, man. Be safe driving home. Thanks a lot.
Later.
Thank you, Corey. Thank you, Sean, for coming out. It was so much fun to do that show. I hope you guys got an eighth of the fun that I had recording it with these guys, and that's why I have them on, because the conversation is great. We can just bounce off of each other like nothing's changed, even though it's been at least 4 years since we've all been in the same room. And whatever it is you guys got out of it, I just hope you guys enjoyed it. And got some other things lined up. I'm going to try to get another show out on Thursday, get back on the schedule. Excited for a couple of guests that we already have lined up. And you guys know what I always say, subscribe, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, spread the word. Thank you to everybody who's been listening. Thank you to everybody who's subscribing. And until next time, thank you.